This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytech, brings you Blowing Bubbles. Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world. How are people living their bubble lives? Working from home, keeping kids entertained, and staying connected and getting exercise. And how are these things presenting us with the opportunities to find new ways of living? Every weekday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann, Shan Gallagher, and Mara Karatai reach out from their bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world. Broadcast on Otago Access Radio 105.4 FM and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz and sustainablelens.org, bringing connection, joy, kindness and peace in the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann in Sawyers Bay, Dunedin, and I'm joined from Whakatane by Mawira Karatai. Kia ora, Mawira.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. Now, last week we had Ethan Ryle on the show, and I talked about parts per million, and I went away and looked it up. And in 1970, there was 325 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, and today it is 418. So it's coming, getting close to an extra 100. I suppose that's an extra 25% increase on what it was in 1970. When he was born, it was 377. So it's accelerating. It's not going away.
No. Anyway, purifying, isn't it?
With that said, let's look for something positive. Who are we talking with today?
Speaking of someone positive, it is my great pleasure to introduce a guest we've had before, disability advocate and CCS National Policy Analyst, Phoebe Eden-Mann. Welcome, Phoebe. It's wonderful to have you with us again today, especially with so much going on in the world at the moment. It's just really lovely to have you here.
Thank you for having me again. And hi, Dad.
When you were born, it was 377.
So it's Phoebe's fault.
Yeah, it's Phoebe's fault.
I mean, a lot of things that have gone wrong is probably my fault, to be fair.
But I would challenge that, actually.
Oh, Dad probably has some stories that would corroborate. So what's it going to be when I turn 30? Go on, Dad, do your quick maths. What's it going to be when I'm 30 in a year?
It'll be 423 or something like that.
That's not ideal. That's quite a lot.
No, I remember when they were talking about 350 as being the line we must not cross.
Yeah, but like most things, we ignored the line and we just went, you know, somersaulting over it.
So what does a policy analyst do during an election campaign?
So many things. So many things and so not enough time. So I am the national policy analyst for CCS Disability Action, and we as an organisation, it's really important for us that we're non-partisan. We want disabled people to vote, whether, you know, we don't really care who they vote for. We want them to be engaged with the democratic system because democracy only works when we hear from everybody. Disabled people also more likely to not vote. So it's really, really important for us that we do get disabled people out to the polls to make sure that their voices are heard. And so we've been, a lot of our work has been around, you know, making sure that people know how to enroll, making sure that people know where the accessible voting stations are, how the electoral system works. You know, a lot of people don't understand what MMP means. They don't understand what, you know, your electorate vote and your party vote are. So we've been working with various organisations and the Electoral Commission to make sure that people, you know, do understand what their vote is and why their vote counts. The other big section of my work recently has been doing an analysis of the party policies and how the party policies kind of relate to disabled people and the disability community. So not from a political angle, but from, I've kind of coded them into themes. So we've got housing, health, transport, /accessibility, climate change /emergency response, education, social development and welfare, and a couple of others, and looking at the kind of, you know, the major parties for us, for, you know, the purpose of this being National, ACT, Labour, Greens, New Zealand First, the Māori Party and TOP. And so looking at their party policies and what category, and kind of going, okay, well, this policy says this, this is what this will mean for the disability community. Or, you know, this policy is going to change these entitlements. This is what this will mean in reality for disabled people. And the other big thing that we released about a week ago, I think, was the electoral scorecard, which we did in collaboration with DPA, so the Disabled Persons Assembly. And that has been, you know, that's one of the best things we've done in ages, I think, in terms of, it's a really good resource for people, and we've had fantastic feedback on it in the short time it's been that it's been released.
How do we find it?
It is on our website. It's also on our Instagram. It's also on our Facebook and Twitter.
We should be able to find that. So it's got a whole pile of questions. Is it eight or so? I'm going for eight.
Not nine, I think.
Okay, it's nine.
Eight or nine. I can't remember. Some one of those.
So how did you come up with those questions?
So we came up with those questions based on the UN report into the convention, which was, I want to say 2019 or 2020, but don't quote me on when that report was. Basically,
that's
that
right. You're only on the radio making up a number.
It's fine. It's fine. My comms team definitely won't get grumpy with me or anything if I quote the wrong thing. So basically, the report that kind of was the result of their kind of review of Aotearoa and how we are meeting the agreements that we made when we signed the treaty or when we signed the convention, we're not meeting any of the requirements. Basically, we got called out as a country, we got called out on an international stage saying we are failing to meet all of these things. And I think there was 61 recommendations that they made for Aotearoa to get its act together in order to kind of, you know, meet the articles and meet the requirements that we agreed to make. And that was a big deal, because the disability community and the disability sector, we knew that we weren't meeting these things, but there's only so much that we can do at a grassroots level. We need government intervention, and we need, you know, that higher level recognition of, okay, these are the things we need to do, and this is what we need to do to fix it. And so when we were looking at the, you know, the upcoming election, and this was probably in like May, April-ish, we were going, okay, so how are we going to, like, what are we going to have as our main priorities for, you know, for the election? And what are we going to really push to the parties going, these are the things that we think are really, really important, and we need you as a party to have some policies around these things. So basically, I reread the report with a highlighter, highlighted all of the major kind of themes, and went, okay, well, these things, this is, you know, a major theme in the report, this is another major theme in the report, and, you know, and so on. And so from there, we had, you know, the key things, and we would have loved to have included all of them, but realistically, we can't. And then we took those and we workshopped them into questions.
So,
and then we sent the questions out.
Let's go through some of the questions,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll have some music, and then we'll talk about some more of the questions. I'm going to skip the first one, and I'll come back to it. Significantly increasing both the disability allowance and the child disability allowance. What's the story there?
We need to significantly increase the disability and child disability allowance.
Oh, good. Is it?
I'm assuming you want me to expand on that.
Yeah.
The disability allowance, the maximum amount that you can get, it's nowhere near enough. When you look at the UK, the child disability allowance is, I believe, three times higher than ours, and they have significantly lower rates of disabled children living in poverty. I can send you the reports on that and the research we have on that. But basically, we don't have enough money, and As a disabled person, I can say this, being disabled is expensive. And it's also not our fault that it's expensive just because of, you know, whatever our bodies or brains are doing on that particular day. We have been campaigning for, and pretty much everybody in the disability sector has been campaigning for a significant increase to the disability allowance for as long as I've been in the sector and likely many years before that. What we really need is we need a big boost in the amount that is available. And we also need the process to be streamlined a little bit because it's at the moment, there's quite a few barriers to accessing them. And the amount of money that people get for the amount of effort it takes to actually get it, it doesn't really work. Like when I looked into getting the disability allowance a couple of years ago, when I just first started out in the sector, and this was when I was working as an intern, I think it would have, like the amount I would have gotten per week, it was something like $5 a week. And the amount of effort that I would have to go to get, you know, the prescription, you know, this is back in like 2017-ish, but I'd have to get, you know, like prescription costs, travel receipts, doctor's receipts, and it just would, like, it just got put in the too hard basket because the amount that I would get just was so far outweighed by I just don't have enough energy to do this. So that's also a big problem with the disability allowance.
And for that one, we've got Green, Maori and Top saying yes.
Yep.
ACT and Labour saying undecided and National saying yep. No. And New Zealand First didn't respond to any of them.
Yeah, New Zealand First, we didn't get a response until after they were published. Yeah.
So is it... It's interesting when you look down the columns, some of them have got yes to everything.
Yep, pretty much.
How did they manage to achieve that? Is it something different about, like it's not a whack-a-mole, but or is it obvious what the answers what should be?
I think it's obvious what we would like the answers to be. I think it's quite clear in the fact that these are the questions that we are asking, that these are clearly our election priorities. And, you know, those are the things that we really value and that we really want to see in policies and decisions moving forward. I think it wasn't I'll put it this way. It wasn't a surprise what parties answered what. Like, I was not at all surprised. It's my job to understand the party policies, not just in election, but in general. So I was, when we got the results and, you know, our amazing comms team, specifically Emma, who is a magical wizard, put them into the scorecard and made it look a million times better than my absolute train wreck Excel spreadsheet. When we got those responses, I was looking at them going, yep, that tracks.
Let's squeeze in talking about tracks. That was clever of you there. Let's take you the first of your tracks. Let's have Marcus Turner, civil servant. Why this?
Because he's my uncle, and it's a very accurate song of life in the kind of, you know, NGO, civil service, social policy kind of a world, and it makes me laugh every time I hear it, and I miss him dearly.
I'm pleased to meet you. My name's Marcus. I work in the city in an office as a clerk. I sit behind my desk and do the same thing every day. With the civil service, it's excitement all the way. And I work in an office every day. Every second Wednesday, I collect my pay. I'm perfectly secure, and I think it's bliss to work in the civil service. I have to do some work for at least an hour a day in order to make some attempt to justify my pay. So I sign another order form and file away the slips, then gather up the pencils and I sharpen all the tips. I work in an office every day. Every second Wednesday I collect my pay. I'm perfectly secure and I think it's bliss to work in the civil service. I have morning tea at 10 past 10, but the crossword in the paper keeps me occupied till then. Then I turn to the racing page and try and pick a winner. With any luck, that keeps me going until it's time for dinner. And I work in an office every day. Every second Wednesday I collect my pay. I'm perfectly secure and I think it's bliss to work in the civil service. After lunch, we mess around till 3:30. Then we all knock off for 30 minutes for afternoon tea. Then I make a chain of paper clips and give my mate a ring. 5:00 arrives, I haven't done a bloody thing. I work in an office every day. Every second Wednesday I collect my pay. I'm perfectly secure and I think it's bliss to work in the civil service. I'm going out this evening with a very nice girl. She's another civil servant and her name is Shirl. She works as a typist on the upstairs floor. She's got a pair of elbows like I never saw before. And I work in an office every day. Every second Wednesday I collect my pay. I'm perfectly secure and I think it's bliss to work in the civil service. Someday I'll marry Shirl and then I'll settle down in my own state house at the edge of the town with a colour television and a family so dear and a holiday at Wanaka for 2 weeks every year. And I work in an office every day. Every second Wednesday I collect my pay. I'm perfectly secure and I think it's blessed to work in the civil service. You can see the civil service is all blood, sweat and tears, but I'll keep on working at it for another 40 years till I get the golden handshake and they kiss me goodbye. Then I'll potter in the garden. Then I guess I'll die. And I work in an office every day. Every second Wednesday I collect my pay. I'm perfectly secure and I think it's bliss to work in the civil service.
I don't know if we're going to have time to get through all these questions, but we're going to try.
We'll give it a crack.
Public transport. Setting a date by which all public transport in New Zealand will be accessible.
Yep. We need a date.
We need a date? Do we want it to be soon?
We need a date and we need all public transport to be accessible, because at the moment it's not. You know, there are so many barriers to accessing the communities, and also things like healthcare. If you can't go to a hospital appointment because you can't travel there, then you're missing out on that really important healthcare, as well as things like education, and just being part of the community and having that social interaction with people. A lot of disabled people can't drive for various reasons, so public transport is really important. And at the moment, a lot of it is not accessible, which is posing a significant barrier for disabled people when it comes to accessing their communities.
LifeMark Universal Design Standards. Is that about accessibility of houses?
Yes. Big fan of LifeMark and everything they do. They are some of the hardest working people I've ever met. We need... I will try and keep it short, but it is slightly complex. There's a lot of building codes and things like that involved in this. But basically what we need is we need there to be a requirement for new builds to be built to LifeMark accessible design standards. At the moment, they're not. I believe Kianga Ora's target at the moment is 15% of new homes are meeting accessibility standards, which is a whole different problem because some of them aren't actually accessible. They're just saying they're accessible. But it is significantly more expensive to retrofit a house to be accessible than it is to do it from the get-go. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to be building 100 non-accessible houses when we could be building 99 accessible houses and future-proofing our housing stock. Because we are going to, with our aging population, our disability rates are about to skyrocket, which means we are going to need more and more accessible homes. And we're already at a point where disabled people are living in homes that are simply not accessible for them and don't meet their needs. So we need our housing stock to be accessible. And we need the government, whoever is in charge, come October 14th, we need them to actually take that seriously, because there is a housing crisis, which is compounded by the fact that it's inaccessible.
Interestingly, all three, ACT, Labour and National, said no on that one. Did they have a no but? Was there some detail? Was it a sort of like, yeah, we're not quite doing that, but we're doing this other thing?
I can't remember if they did have a no but in that. I think that they pointed us, and I could be completely wrong, but I think they pointed us to their policies that already exist where they've got like targets. So for Labour, I think it's 15%, which frankly just not enough. And I can't remember what ACT and Nationals are, but I believe they pointed us to hey, look, these are our targets rather than all houses. Unfortunately, the targets aren't high enough.
Next question. Oh, it's a long one. How do we summarise that? Family violence and sexual violence action plans.
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
Disabled disabled people are more likely to be at risk of experiencing family and sexual violence, especially people who rely on carers, or also people who are institutionalized. That's also been historically a significant problem, especially with sexual violence. A lot of the kind of stopping family violence programs in the past haven't considered the needs of disabled people or the kind of complexities that are intertwined with that. It's not easy if a disabled person is experiencing family or sexual violence. It's not easy for them to leave. The instinctive response is, oh my God, we need to get you out of there. Where do we put you that can meet your need? Like, it's all of those issues get so much more complicated. So what we really need is we need there to be a dedicated focus on making sure that disabled people are safe and protected within their own homes and within their family and whānau. But we also need to make sure that we're supporting disabled people's family and whānau to make sure that, you know, we don't ever get to this point. And to Labor's credit, there have been programs recently that kind of, you know, are getting up and started to tackle these kind of, you know, really high rates of family and sexual violence that disabled people face. But they really need to ramp up more, and there's a lot of work to do.
There's more yeses for that one from Green Labour.
I'm not shocked.
And top. But interestingly, I would have thought that was apple pie. So
Acton, who said no or maybe to
Acton,
that?
Acton National are undecided for that. Is it just that they hadn't thought of it, or is it?
Probably. It's also probably... It hasn't necessarily been considered, and also it could be that it fell under programs that they've all kind of already developed internally that they just haven't announced yet. That will be that, you know, that those kind of policies will be included under. But my strong suspicion is that it just hasn't necessarily been considered to the point where they have a policy on it. So instead of saying yes or no, they're just kind of going, eh.
And then you've got yeses all over for measures to ensure the protection of disabled people in natural disasters.
Yep.
A similar one for the representation of disabled people on emergency response and climate adaptation. Mm-hmm. They're yeses everywhere.
Yep.
And enforcing the right of all children and young people to attend their local school.
Yep.
Those things are yeses all over. Is that a change, or is that a, because you haven't got a discrimination on that, but is it useful to know that everyone's committing to it?
Yes, although I will say that with the caveat of it is hard to say no to kids. That the optics of that don't look great if people say no. But it is really reassuring that they've committed to that, especially as we are seeing more and more climate-based disasters, like with the cyclones that we've had. I personally know several disabled people up north who were stranded in their homes and couldn't get out because they were in power chairs. Like, you know, these are really basic things that we need to be doing, and making sure that in an emergency situation, especially in adverse weather events, which we are going to see more and more because climate change is a thing, that we need to be making sure that disabled people are safe, that any kind of evacuation measures take disability and access needs into account, and that disabled people's needs are one of the top priorities when going, okay, well, this is an emergency, what are we going to do? Because disabled people, like, if there is mobility issues and things, evacuation just becomes that much harder because they might not be able to get out of their houses without help. We also had issues with, I think it was civil defence who were posting the information with Cyclone Gabrielle, who were like going, these are the evacuation centres, this is where you can go, blah blah blah, with no alternative text. So it couldn't be read by screen readers, and it was literally just like an infographic. And so for people who are like blind, low vision, or other people who need screen readers, that information was completely useless. So it was making sure that information, especially in an emergency situation, is accessible to everyone. That was one of the things that we, you know, were really trying to highlight, you know, post-cyclone and moving into the future.
Bubble Sprite of the Forest of Orokonui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Kia ora koutou, nga mihi aroha nui kia koutou, ko tahua hou. I hope you're all having the best day, beautiful superstars in your beloved universes. And I really hope, wherever you are and whatever's happening around you, this journey that we're all on together is proving to be very rewarding, very sustaining, and illuminating for you more and more each day. Who you are, a triumph of nature's art, perfect, unique, and here, making things better. Thank you. Now, I know that for us all, the last several years have been very tough, and it's so important that we give ourselves and each other the time, the space, the love, the care, the compassion, the support that we also richly deserve and can innately provide. I know for myself, of course, the living world is a huge source of comfort and motivation, of continuity, of grounding, of focus, of passion. And I'm so lucky, of course, to have this in my life. And I really hope for you that your areas of passion, your areas of absolute love and devotion are providing you with a strong foundation, enabling you to be inspired to even greater heights each day in terms of the directions that you're moving in. I speak to you now, heading home from my heart's home workplace, Orokonui Eco Sanctuary, having had 35 lovely geography students joining me today. And these geography students are in their third year, and they're thinking all about the role of eco-sanctuaries like Orokonui in the wider conservation context of Aotearoa New Zealand. And of course, I'm so grateful that more and more people are looking to places like Orokonui for inspiration, information, direction, case studies in terms of what we can do when we work together. I know for myself, the opportunity to be part of a project like Orokonui for the last 14 years has greatly enriched my life, and I often dream of Orokonui. It is my very happy and just my home, and I'm grateful to be able to work there. Of course, it's fascinating for us as a species to think about the innate capacities that we have, that we are innately nurturing, that we are innately appreciative of the living world of which we are a part and of the environments which surround us. And that when we turn our nurturing energy towards those life forms around us, how rich and rewarding our lives become. So I really hope for you, you're having the opportunity to channel your nurturing energy, not only to yourselves and to those around you, but to your home space, to your workspace, to places that you inhabit each day, to your car, to your bike, to your body, as you move through this world. That appreciation and that care goes such a long way to making things feel lighter, smoother, easier as we move through our day to day. My band and I will be playing at the Seafood Festival on Saturday, which is very exciting, and I was planning to emerge from a giant clam as I did many, many years ago. However, I have somewhat of a profundity of rotundity at this time in my life, and I may not fit in the giant clam any longer. I may have outgrown the giant clam. But we will just see whether the Wham Bam Thank You Clam will appear again on the Seafood Festival stage on Saturday. We shall see. So I really hope for you, you have creative and exciting moments to look forward to in your weekend. And a huge thank you to Sam and the whole Blowing Bubbles team for having me, being part of this show. Such a huge pleasure and privilege being able to share this time and space with you all. Thank you so much. And I'll look forward to talking to you again soon. Thank you. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We're talking with Phoebe Eden-Mann.
Hi. Phoebe.
Hi, again.
Will you talk to us about the proposed rewrite of the accessibility bill?
Yes, we need that to be rewritten. The accessibility bill came about as the result of years and years and years of campaigning and really dedicated advocacy of the disability community, because at the moment, accessibility is not a guaranteed right in Aotearoa, despite the fact that it is a guaranteed right under the convention. We don't have any disability accessibility laws that guarantee it as a fundamental right.
Just to interrupt real quick, this is the second time you've talked about the convention, but you haven't said what the convention is.
Yes, I should probably have done that earlier. The convention, so it's the United Nations Conventions on the Rights of Peoples with Disabilities. Peoples or persons, I can't remember which the wording is, but it's basically the Disability UN Convention. It's the accessibility bill, the proposed bill at the moment. It's went through two readings in Parliament and then it got sent out to Select Committee, which is when the public can submit on it. And in all of my years, which has like six or seven, which doesn't seem like many, but I've been in many select committees, I have never seen the disability community so united on one topic. Like, I was in select committee, I sat in for like an hour and a half, 2 hours. Almost every single submission started with our recommendation is that you rewrite this. And that was across the board. Everyone was kind of just going, well, okay, but this isn't an accessibility bill. This is you're promising that you'll establish an advisory committee who will write a report once a year. That's not the accessibility bill, because what was given to them, or what was given to the government from the Access Alliance, was 13 accessibility principles. And, you know, the government was given this. We're given kind of a drafted bill and an outline and a really strong set of guidelines and boundaries, all of which had been designed and created by the disability community. And then I'm not quite sure how we got from point A of the Access Alliance handing the government that, and point B, where we get an advisory committee who writes a report once a year. But I'm not quite sure how we got from point A to point B, and I don't know where in that process all of that work got thrown out the window, but it's not good. What the end result is not good enough. So what we need is we need it to include the accessibility standards. We need accessibility to be a fundamental guaranteed right in Aotearoa, and we need the government, whoever is in power, you know, post-election, We need them to relook at that bill and to rework it, because at the moment that bill does effectively nothing. And it was incredibly, incredibly disappointing seeing how much work from the community went into it and what we ended up with. It felt like a slap in the face at the end of the day. And I've never seen the community more united on one topic. It was just, you know, mind-blowing, but also kind of there was a feeling of kind of power in numbers of all of us kind of sitting there going, okay, cool, can we do it again, please? Because this isn't great. What you've proposed and what you've written doesn't do anything meaningful, and it certainly doesn't give us accessibility in New Zealand.
I'm looking at the 13, and you're right, 13 principles.
Yes.
And there's number one that really bothers me. It bothers me as a human being in every possible way, and that is number 11. The Act will ensure public funds are not used to create or perpetuate obstacles to full accessibility in all areas of life. The fact that we even need to say is going on?
Yep. And that was one of the reasons why it was so disappointing that stuff got thrown out, because what we ended up with was exactly that. You know, it was that bill, I think, was the
It was a massive learning experience for me, because despite the fact I've been doing this job for quite a few years now, I've never been so disappointed in a bill that had so much promise and that went from this really solid piece of, and you know, like handing it over, nobody expected it to come out with no tweaks. You know, like everybody was expecting some bits to fall apart or be changed or whatever. Nobody was expecting the whole thing to be thrown out and just for an advisory committee to be included. I will say this, the selection committee, the selection criteria for the committee was actually quite solid. But that was the only good part of the bill. And so one of the reasons why we included that, and I think we included it as question number one, is because accessibility is such a huge issue for disabled people, and we need actual legislative steps and protections to be put in place to ensure that disabled people can access their community as is a guaranteed right under the convention that we signed up to, but we're not meeting any of the requirements to actually get there. And so I know that the Greens, from memory, the Greens and Te Pāti Māori said yes, that they were going to commit to a rewrite. Did TOP and TOP said yes? Labour would have vetoed that real quick. And did National and ACT kind of go, meh, we'll consider looking at it. But yeah, it was just that the accessibility for New Zealanders bill was certainly a learning experience. And we really, really need a redo of the bill, because if it passes as it is now, it's enshrining pretty much nothing, and nothing meaningful will have happened for it.
We need to squeeze in the second of your music choices, The Cure, Friday I'm In Love. Why this one?
It's been stuck in my head for a week and a half. I think it was on Good Omens. I think I watched season two of Good Omens, and I think it was on that. And anyway, it's been stuck in my head for a week and a half, and it's been driving my fiance mental because I keep singing it while I'm cooking tea.
I don't care if Monday's blue.
Phoebe, unfortunately, we don't have time to actually go through everything that happened at the debate, but can you give us some takeaways? What did you get from it?
The Disability Forum Electron event was a really good event, and it was a really good opportunity for the disability community to, you know, engage with the people who are going to be representing us. It was disappointing that a couple of parties couldn't make it, I think, you know, due to unforeseen, uncontrollable events. And it was really disappointing that the national spokesperson only stayed for her 8-minute spiel and then left. That was really disappointing because we didn't get the opportunity for her to answer any of the audience questions. Overall, it was, I think it was eye-opening for a lot of people. There were two candidates there, or two spokespeople there who are part of the disability community. So the Greens disability and human rights spokesperson has MS, and ACT's disability spokesperson, I believe, has dyslexia. It was good. It was, some of what was said was really quite concerning for me as a disabled person listening to it. Like, some of the terminology that was used is really, really outdated. You know, like, you don't, in 2023, we don't call disabled people handicapped or handicapabled, but we had a disability spokesperson from a major party referring to disabled people in a room full of disabled people as handicapable. And it was quite disconcerting hearing that from someone who is a disability spokesperson. So I wrote an article about it, and it has actually had quite an impact, which I didn't expect it to have, where I kind of go over what actually happened and give a breakdown of you know, the main points that each party had. And Deb, what did you say about it on Twitter? That, how did you word it? That I tactfully and skillfully, what was it? Tactfully and skillfully navigated it whilst internally screaming that I wanted to write something else. And that was quite accurate. It was, you know, my job requires me to be non-biased, and that can be really tricky sometimes, but it's important to put my own personal feelings and my own personal political leanings in a back seat and kind of go, okay, everybody has the right to their own political view. Everybody has the right to support whoever they want, even if I think it could be a questionable decision. It's not my job to tell them who to vote for. It's my job to tell them, this is what the party said, this is what this will mean for disabled people in the disability community. And so it was, I'm glad that it went ahead, and I'm glad that it was really well attended. I definitely have some concerns about some parties and their disability spokespeople, and I think that a few of them could do with a refresher course in disability terminology and disability kind of discourse as a whole. And I really hope that moving forward, they listen to the voices of disabled people, hopefully before they go up and stand in front of a room full of them and call them handicapped. You know, just talk to any disabled person before you get up on a platform and refer to disabled people as handicapped. That'd be great, you know. But I think it's a learning curve, I think, for a lot of people. But we need our representatives to value our voices and value our experiences and actually talk to us and help us to inform their policies. Because if they don't listen to us, then how on earth are we ever going to have any policies that match up with our needs?
Can we put a link to your article on the at that, so it'll be in the chat, Sam?
Yeah.
Is that doable? Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Phoebe, on your Twitter image.
And I'll put the scorecard as well.
Phoebe, on your Twitter image.
My heading,
what it's called,
the banner
heading,
thing.
Header thing, yeah. You've got the quote that says, the disabled population is the world's largest minority of which anyone can become part of at any time.
Yep.
And from that, I think you've got another saying, which is something like, every policy is a disability policy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the parties get that? Or is it here is a little badge we can do, here is our disability policy, rather than a perspective on all policies?
I think some parties understand that every policy is a disability policy. Most parties don't. Most parties are, you know, working on the understanding that we kind of get rolled out every once in a while for a diversity tick, or to go, hey, look, we are talking to the disabled people once every 3 years. I think most, to be fair, most parties, I think, are trying. They are, there is an awareness there, but there is a lack of follow through, which I think is seen reflected in things like the accessibility bill. You know, they're saying that they're talking to the disability community, but they're not listening. And every policy is a disability policy. Disabled people are not just, disability is a huge facet of our life, but it's not just the only thing about us. You know, we don't just have disability policies affecting us. We also have inflation. We also have education. People, some disabled people like fishing. So, you know, fishing laws also affect them. It's,
is that their disability?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't understand the concept of fishing, but apparently some people enjoy it. So every policy is a disability policy. And it's also true that the disability population is the world's largest minority that you can become a part of at any given point in time. You have no idea if you're going to walk out of the house in the morning and get hit by a bus on the way home.
You know that saying, have a stroke. You know that saying that what's good for Maori is good for everyone?
Yep.
Do people in the disability policy community, yes, run the same line?
Yes. I think I said that in our, I can't remember what submission it was, but I think I said something along the lines of, if we can get it right for the disability community, we've got it right for 95% or like 99% of people. Because if we can get it right for a group of people with various needs and various complexities of needs, and if we can get it right for them, we can get it right for pretty much anyone. So yeah, it is absolutely, you know, it's a similar kind of thing. If we can get it right for Māori, then we've got it right for most people. If we can get it right for disabled Māori, well, gold's for everyone, we can all go home.
We don't have time to go through all of the questions to go end the show with, but we're going to ask you two of them.
Mm-hmm.
What's your superpower?
It's sarcasm, probably. I'm an inherently, I think I've always been a very inherently sarcastic person, but I'm also very optimistic. So I have this very kind of sunny but also sarcastic disposition. I can get along with pretty much anyone. I will talk to anyone. And so long as you're not a complete prat, I will talk to you and I will hear what you have to say and we'll try and figure out a way forward. That is my job. It's who I am, is kind of, you know, looking at people and going, okay, I see that this is your opinion. This is mine. How are we going to figure out a way to find some middle ground so that we can meet everybody's needs? And I also think that sarcasm is a really strong coping skill, especially in an election as a disability policy analyst. I look at it and go, oh, yeah, those polls are looking absolutely great. No problems to see here. Everything is fine.
Even if they are a person on Twitter who is taking it personally or attacking you, not the policy or your comments on the policy or whatever?
Twitter is a cesspool. It's, yeah, I mean, look, Twitter is like screaming into a void and some monster in the bottom of the void screaming back. That being said, it's also a really good way to engage with politicians and journalists and other people from, you know, marginalised communities. So it's, you know, kind of a double-edged sword. Online, it can be tricky because people hide behind a screen and spew the most vile, like the things I have been called on Twitter, I definitely am not allowed to say on radio. And it has certainly, that level of vitriol has certainly gotten worse since the pandemic and then gotten doubly worse since Elon Musk bought Twitter and, you know, dropped community standards. There are certainly some people who you just can't interact with. Because they're not engaging with you in good faith, they are engaging with you to be vile. And for those people, my advice for anyone dealing with it is to just ignore it and scroll on because it's not worth the energy.
And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
Please enrol. Please enrol to vote. You can enrol on the day. Voting day is the 14th of October. You can enrol on the day. You don't need to bring ID. your voice is important. We only get this opportunity once every 3 years. Democracy only works if we hear from everybody. Please, for the love of God, vote. I don't care who you vote for. I don't care who you support. All I care about is that you get out there and that you make sure that your voice is heard.
Thank you for that. Mawira.
Phoebe, you're amazing.
Thank you.
We are incredibly lucky that you have made this commitment to supporting a group of people who are renowned for not having a voice, not being given a voice. And we appreciate you so much for this commitment that you've made, for all of your goodness, and all the best for the road ahead. And we look forward to our next corridor with you.
Yeah, it's going to be after the election of me just screaming into a pillow going, oh my God.
It might not be. It could be a positive outcome. So, who knows? We have to wait and see.
So you are staying neutral in terms of not telling us who you're going to vote for, mm-hmm. but you are allowed to vote for the music that we're going to use in the outro. Mm-hmm. So I've got some choices.
Okay. Yep.
Icy Red.
Can I have two songs and strategically choose a song?
When I finish with the choices, then we can talk about it. Adamant, Made of Money.
You think that I'm made of money? You got something coming, honey. Ain't no land of milk and honey. My accountant thinks that's funny. Instead of trying to use your brains, you sit round and suck my veins. You're kind of right.
Midnight Oil, Beds Are Burning.
How do we sleep while our beds are burning?
I was going to have Party of Maori Club, but we could have Omarapiti.
Yeah, I mean, I know the rest.
Pet Shop Boys, Opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I've got the brains, you've got the looks. Banks make lots of money.
Elton John, I'm Still Standing.
Well, look at me, I'm coming back again. I got a taste of love in a simple way. And if you need to know while I'm still standing, you just fade away. Don't you know I'm still standing?
Oh, God, because he's just like, he's the New Zealand politics version of Glitter. We think we've finally got it, and then we turn a corner, and oh, no, there's more. He's still here. Somehow, he's still here.
He's 78 years old.
Jonathan Coulton, Re Your Brains.
I'm a zombie now. I really wish you'd let us in. I think I speak for all of us. I say I understand why you folks might hesitate to submit to our demand. But here's an FYI, you're all gonna die screaming. All we wanna do is eat your brains. We're not unreasonable. I mean,
you get to choose. You want to choose two? We get two votes, I suppose. One
that's
can be
why I'm strategically choosing two.
Yes.
I see Red and Beds Are Burning.
Spaces around the world, brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic Te Pūkenga. We broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. I'm Samuel Mann in Sawyers Bay, Dunedin, with Mawira Karatai in Whakatane, and we've been joined from Dunedin by Phoebe Eden-Mann. But that was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.